So I told her, I said, now, you know, you've been wanting a new refrigerator and you wanted a new living room furniture and things. I'm going to get it. And I want you here to pick it up because, you know, we don't always like the same thing. And since it's for you and you're going to have to live with it, I want you to pick it out. I don't want you to do this. I said, well, I'm going to do it. And if you don't pick it out, I'll pick it out. So she knew she was in a no-win position. Mm-hmm. So into the store we went. And we just walked through the store, and I said, now, Mom, every department, now what do you want out of here? And she was busy looking and picking and going on, you know. And we got a living room stuff.
Do you remember the color?
No. I don't remember the color. But it was sofa and chairs. And I think we got a new, they use rugs in these big room-sized rugs.
Yeah, right.
I think we got a new rug. And we got a new refrigerator, and I can't even remember. Not braided, no.
Okay.
It looked like that, only it was room size. It wasn't
carpet.
No, and you always had about this much of your hardwood floor showing.
Yeah, from the wall to
yeah.
the edge of the
mm-hmm,
rug.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And lamps, mm-hmm. everything that, Mom, don't you need this? Mom, don't you want that? So anyhow, then at that time, see, they used to, you could trade in all your old furniture. So I had the man to come out, look at all the old furniture she was going to get rid of, and trade it, and gave us a price and everything. And so we made up a bill and so forth and so on. And we went home. So when my father came in that evening, that night, my mother was telling him about what I had done. He got fighting mad. And he just carried on.
Why?
I guess because he didn't do it. I don't know. But anyhow, you know, like you had the kitchen, the dining room, the living room.
Yeah.
And it was a straight shot. And then you had the stairs off of the dining room that went upstairs. And we also had a den off of the dining room. And so, anyhow, he just started marching back and forth in that house and giving me, he just carried on awful. Had my mother doing this, just wringing her hands. And I told her, put my hand over her hands, don't you say a word. I'll handle it. Don't you say a word. Told me I wasn't going to bring that furniture in there. And another thing, here I am making this big bill, and if something happened and I lost my job or got sick or something and I couldn't pay the bill, then he'd have to pay it. And, he just carried on. And so I told him, listen, I'm over 21, number one. Number two, you're not liable for any bills that I make. There's no law in the land can make you pay anything I owe. So you can skip that one. And so, anyhow, it just, he just performed. I mean, performed, honey. So I just told my mother, don't say anything. I'll handle it. And I just, you know, the way I handled him, I just let him rave and rant and just sat there and looked at him. Why don't you say something? And I said, well, there really isn't anything to say. Well, are you going to take that furniture back? I said, no. And, that was starting him off on another round.
I suppose.
And it just went round and round. That went on for about 4 or 5 days. He'd get me up in the morning with that.
He'd go at it again.
And I would go to bed at night with that.
Okay.
And my mother would say, Francis, this is Cookie. I'm so nervous.
Was that your nickname, Cookie?
My mother used to call me that. Not really all the time, but just occasionally.
Okay.
And she said, I'm so nervous. I said, Mom, don't be nervous. I will handle it. Because you're going to have that furniture with or without him. See? So don't worry about it. I'll handle it.
Wonderful. Can I ask you a question about memories in reference to church?
I was very active in the church. I joined church when I was 12 years old. And I worked, I taught Sunday school for quite a few years. And I used to teach kids that were almost my age. And I directed the youth choir, which are kids my age, more or less speaking. Dorothy Pittman used to play piano. And I guess I had about 30, 40 kids. And they were so bad. I used to ask the parents to come and make them behave. Because, you know, they'd get to playing, and the boys poking the girls poking the boys, all that kind of stuff. But I had a long...
This is at St. Peter's.
Yeah. Okay. But I had a long career of working in the church, which I really enjoyed. And the Christian Endeavor, which was the young people's group that met at 6 o'clock at night. And I was very active in the church. And so I kind of got away from it after I got away from home, which I think is, according to people who keep statistics, that's normal.
Yeah.
But you come back. And while I always went to church, I didn't do a lot in the church after I left home. My mother told me when I left home to be sure I took my letter. See, when you are a church member already, then the minister will give you a letter saying that you remember that church and talk about your character and your abilities and things like that. And then when you go to another church to join it, you just present your letter so that you come by...
recommendation.
Yeah, not by conversion.
Right.
And, but I'd already joined church. And so, anyhow, my mother said, always belong to a church wherever you go. And my mother had some different ideas about things. And one of her idea was that if you aren't a church member, you can't be buried in a church. And she did not want that to happen. That was very important to her, because my mother was a church worker, too. And she belonged to the Willing Workers Club, you know, and that was a group of women used to meet, I guess, a couple times a month at each other's house, and they'd make things and have bake sales, do all the things that a women's club would do in a church. And my mother was very beloved by the congregation because of that and other friends, because she was a very nice lady. And she was warm and non-judgmental, and she was just a sweet person.
Absolutely.
And,
go ahead.
And so I always belonged to a church. Every place that I moved, I was a church member. But as I said, I always, you know, gave money to the church and things of that sort. And I'd go to church. I didn't go to church like I go to church now every single Sunday. But I went to church a good part of the time. And when I lived in New Orleans, I had a lot of Catholic friends. And that's how I got to know so much about the Catholic Church. And I would go to Mass with them. And they had Mass cards and everything so you could follow the service.
Yeah.
And I've done novenas and things of that sort. And after we got married, then we became regular church members. And because that was one of the stipulations that I had, that I couldn't marry anybody that didn't like church.
Right.
Now, that didn't mean that you had to be there every time the door swung open. I didn't mean that. But you had to like church and have a healthy respect for God. And when we came to Los Angeles, we brought our letters to a church in Los Angeles. And the year we were there, now, we didn't go every Sunday. And we came to Long Beach. When Keith opened up in Long Beach, I was still in L.A. But we used to come down here for church on Sundays, because the people in the community need to know us if you're going to have a successful practice.
And that church you came to in Long Beach was Grant.
Yeah. And not the new Grant, it was the old Grant, yeah. The old building. But you were in the old building.
Yeah.
And I began to work in the church because I had children. See, Tony was 7 months old when we came to California.
You know, it sounds like you said that once you left Minneapolis to go to school and whatnot, that you got away from the church.
I left Minneapolis to go to work.
Okay, to go to work, but you said that you kind of got away from the church in the intensity that you had been raised in it, but it seems like once you came to Los Angeles, you sort of got more involved again in the church.
Well, yes, because I had children. Mm-hmm. And see, my children both started going to Sunday school when they were 2 years old. And every Sunday morning, I was out here taking them to Sunday school. And
also taking your grandchild to Sunday school, too. I remember that.
Oh, yeah, Francis. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yeah. Well, see, they go to church, the Nazarene Church, which is a very, very nice church. Mm-hmm. Down near Stearns in Los Coyotes.
Okay, I know
what
it is.
And they have a bus, and they go around and pick up all the children for Sunday school. One of Frances' little school friends belongs to that church, and she invited her to go to Sunday school with her.
Cool.
And so her mother asked me what I think about that. I said, well, I think it's very important that they both go to Sunday school. And because you've got to have some kind of
spiritual foundation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've got to have it.
Right.
And I said, I don't see any point in me taking them over to Grant when they don't know the kids over there. They never see them except on Sunday morning. And I feel that that is not necessary. The main thing is to go to Sunday school. And you do the thing that's, I think, going to be best for the kids. And as far as Francis wants to go, where her little friends are going that she goes to school with.
Wonderful. Can I,
And little Stephen, I'm telling you, he loves to go to Sunday school. And when that bus drives up, he's out that door almost before his mother can get out there. And he climbs up on the bus and tells the bus driver, I hear, ready to go.
Francis, can we switch gears a little bit and go back to your earlier days, but put the emphasis, switching from holidays and church to just social gatherings, okay?
Oh, well, yeah, we had lots of clubs, lots of parties, and it was lots of fun.
Some of the clubs and...
The Credgefond Club, I was a charter member of that. The, right on the tip of my tongue was this other club, Cameo Club. I think your mother belonged to Cameos.
Okay.
I think she belonged to Credgefond too.
Yeah, she did.
And then a bunch of us girls had a club. I'm trying to think, what did we call it? I don't remember now.
Were most of your social organizations while you were in high school and whatnot geared toward the church, or was there something else?
No,
in
the community. No, in the community.
And that's Credit, huh?
Yeah.
And Criterion?
Yeah. Okay. Cameo, and then we had another club. It was just a bunch of girls, and we used to meet. And we prepared dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And, I can't think of the name of it. But anyhow.
Do you remember some of the people that were in the club with you back then? Oh. Whether you know them now or not, but, you know, just some of your girlfriends back then?
Natalie Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember her?
No. How about Meredith?
Yeah, let's see. Was Meredith in the Crunch of Five? Or was she in Cameo? I don't remember, see? And, you know, names are very hard for me.
Yeah.
They have always been hard for me. When I was a teenager, I could give you a detailed description of a person, the way they looked, what they usually wore, what their the kind of activities they were in, and I could tell you everything except their name. But I just have a block with names.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it's so hard for me to just name names.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, as we got older, like the 40 Club. Now, your mother and father belonged to the 40 Club. I never did. Because, first of all, that was couples. And I was never married in Minneapolis. And the other thing, they were older, because your mother and father had been married a long time when they joined the 40 Club. And they just had 40 couples in that club, but I used to go be invited to the parties. And they always had some really great formals. And NAACP, and I belong to the, what else did I belong to? Gee, it's been so long ago. I can't even remember, except that I had a very active, fun social life.
Do any of them revolve around your days at the U of M or at Meharry?
Now, what are you talking about? What happened in
Minneapolis? Social organizations that you made.
In Minneapolis?
In Minneapolis at the U of M?
I made the sorority in Minneapolis at the university. So I'm a AKA. Mm-hmm. And, but every place I've been, it's always fun. And I've always belonged to groups. I probably belong to more groups since I've been in California at one time than I have either of these other places. Because when you're married, you have a different lifestyle. And so that when you're not married, I mean, you're prone to do more spontaneous things.
Okay.
See? And this is what really made it fun. It's just like Meredith's oldest daughter is my godchild. And I was so shocked when she asked me to be the godmother because of the fact that, you know, Meredith and I grew up together. But as we got into our teenage years, we weren't as close as we had been in the past because Meredith basically is a shallow person. And the things that were, you know, just so important to her really weren't that important to me. I've always been very practical. And so
I think that despite the differences that she may have seen between you two, she respected you as a person, which may have warranted her wanting you to be the godmother
of her daughter. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we're friendly.
Yeah.
We're very friendly. And, but there was a little period of time in there. See, I went on to college. I think she did 1 year. I don't think even was a year, maybe a quarter at the university. I don't recall now. I know she never graduated.
She might have met Norman after that or something?
Well, Meredith was never interested in school. She was not a particularly good student.
Okay.
She was more interested in frau. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, see, my sights and my gears were set in a totally different direction. Because I used to have to come over across the alley and get her out of bed to go to school. We used to walk to school together when we were in high school. But I'd have to get her out of bed. And because her mother would always leave the back door open. And they lived right across the alley. Meredith's room was upstairs. And I have to come in there because her mother and father would be asleep. And go up there and wake that girl up, get her out of bed. And she always claimed that I was bossing her. And I said, well, hell, you'd have never graduated from high school, but I hadn't bossed you right out of that bed and out of that house. And I was really flabbergasted, I'm going to tell you. She'd been married about 4 years when she got pregnant, but she had extremely stormy early years in her marriage. And one time she got so mad at Norman, she went down to the bus station and got on the bus and went all the way to Omaha on a Greyhound bus. Her mother had to go get her. Norma was a lot older than she was. But the fact that he had a doctor, even though it was a veterinarian, because see, the veterinarians, you know, they thought they were a bitchin' group of folks. I'm telling you. And of course, you know, I was at the university and tied into all these doctors and everything. And see, what's so great about
a veterinarian?
A veterinarian. they were nice people. And all of that, there wasn't anything wrong with that. But, I mean, they made a big deal out of that doctor so-and-so.
Yeah.
Doctor this, yeah. And doctor that. Well, see, I don't have much patience with people like that, Benji. And I don't have a lot of time to spend with people like that because, to me, that has only a small degree of importance. And that relates to the fact that you went through a lot to get MD.
Yeah.
Or a DDS, see? And that was nothing easy. And it was a great toll mentally, emotionally, and physically. And so, but the importance of being married to a doctor, that was never important to me. Because I've had people to say to me, you know, oh, you'd have such a wonderful life and your husband's a doctor. I said, what's so great about a doctor? He man just like all the rest of them, honey. And got all his good and bad points just like all the rest of them. And
I think there are a lot of misinterpretations.
Oh, it's terrible. It's horrible.
From those of us on the outside.
Of course. Mm. It's really unbelievable the awe that they used to have. It's not as bad today as it was 20 years ago, or 30, or 40, or 50 years ago. Because when the doctor walked in, it was just like Jesus walked in. Well, now you see, as far as I'm concerned, there's no individual on earth can be that important.
No.
And just like some of these things that they do for Pope Paul, you know, it's really something.
Yeah.
And, because he's a man, just like everybody else.
Absolutely.
And he's capable of doing all the things that any man can or wants to do or will do. And but he's chosen this particular way of life, which is great. Because I think everybody should do the kinds of things that make them feel good. And but anyhow, Meredith, I was on my way to Chicago. See, I used to do a lot of fun things like that. Go to Chicago for the weekend. Because they had this bullet train that went up there and you get to Chicago in 4 hours and stuff like that. Hiawatha. Oh, I used to fly.
Uh-huh.
And but I was going to Chicago to visit some friends, and I called, when Meredith called me, I told her, I said, well, I won't be here because I'm going to Chicago that weekend. And so she said, well, that's all right. She said, my mother can stand in for you. So I said, fine. No problem.
This is about her wedding?
No.
Or
no,
her baby?
Baby being christened.
Okay.
In the Episcopal Church, you know, it's a little different than in the baby. It's still baptized, but, you know, a lot more ceremony.
Okay.
In the Episcopal Church. And see, now Meredith was reared a Baptist. After she married the doctor, she became Episcopalian.
Okay.
Because that's another stinky little thing, especially about Minneapolis.
Hmm.
And that's true of other areas of the country that I've been in. Episcopalians were supposed to be elite.
I know.
Very elite. And
so anyway, you were going to Chicago.
Yeah. So I she married the doctor, she became Episcopalian.
Okay.
Because that's another stinky little thing, especially about Minneapolis.
Hmm.
And that's true of other areas of the country that I've been in. Episcopalians were supposed to be elite.
I know.
Very elite. And
so anyway, you were going to Chicago.
Yeah, so I went.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I used to do, you know, different fun things like that when I was single and young. And when I lived in Tennessee, I mean, I had a girlfriend and I didn't even know Horace then, in Columbus, Ohio. She lived with me in Detroit for 1 year. She was a doctor, and she doing a residency in TB. And I went to, one weekend, I went up to Columbus to spend the weekend with she and her new husband. And but I used to do all kinds of little fun things like that. I had a great life, Benji.
You still do?
Well, yes. But
it's just different.
Yeah. But I've had a lot of fun.
I know.
I haven't done a lot of things that I could have done. You know how you do when you're busy, you just put things off. And my children were always the focus of my life.
Absolutely.
And so I spent all of my time getting them geared up and seeing that they had everything that they needed and blah, 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 blah. So I missed a few things. It's like I've never been to Mexico.
Yeah.
And when I tell people that, they just can't even believe it.
Yeah, it is amazing.
Well, what's the name of that little across the border town?
Tijuana.
Well, Tijuana always had such a terrible, stinky reputation when I first came here.
Yeah.
I understand Tijuana is a lot different today.
Yes.
And that Tijuana, well, it was something that didn't hold any allure for me. Because after all, so I never really felt a compelling urge to do that. After things began to straighten themselves out, I've wanted to go do a lot of things. Another dream that I've had most of my life, I've had two dreams. One was to go to the East Coast and rent a car and drive all through the New England states in the fall of the season, because that is so beautiful. And just, you know, drive as much as I wanted to and stop and all these lovely, lovely places, bed and breakfast places and things of that sort. And that's always been a dream of mine to do that and just take your time. And I like going by car if I don't have to drive against the schedule.
Sure.
And the other dream was that after my kids were out of the way, I was going back to school and get a master's in guidance and counseling.
Huh.
And I had that in my head for 20 years.
Huh.
But I knew I couldn't do it while I had children. So therefore, the thing for me to do was put that on hold.
Why guidance and counseling?
Guidance and counseling is something that I've had to do a lot in my life on different positions that I've had. And I've had some minor training in it, but not to the point of earning a degree. And it's something that I like, and it is something I knew would be very useful in the educational field. It would be useful in industry, and so there would be a wide variety of positions for me to have. And I gave up a lot of things that I used to do when I didn't have children. Like, I used to go to New York 3 or 4 times a year because I was on the national board of the American Nurses Association. And I would go to New York for 3 days and just be a continuous round of meetings. And I had to give a lot of things like that up because I couldn't walk off and leave my children.
Yeah.
And it's just like when I moved to Long Beach, the Department of Health, the woman that headed up the Department of Health at that particular time, she knew about me because I sat on a state committee when I was in L.A., a nursing committee advisory panel. See, I've always been involved in things that were part of my profession, as well as community activists. And she was quite impressed with me, evidently, because when she found out I was moving to Long Beach, I could have had all kinds of big jobs here.
I'm sure.
But I didn't want any job because of the fact that I didn't want babysitters rearing my child. And and it was just going to be too hard, see? I wanted to be with my child. It ended up with me being in my husband's office. And I had never planned on doing that. That was the furthest thing from my mind, just like,
yeah,
something real.
Being the Pope is.
Yeah, right, right. But I was there by imitation.
Hmm.
And I would just go when he had a special procedure to do. Then it got so I was going more often. And first thing I looked up, I was going every day.
Yeah.
And you remember Ann Morgan.
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, Ann is Kim's godmother.
Mm-hmm.
And see, Ann lived where we lived. There was a house behind us. Ann lived in the house behind us. Tony was so crazy about Ann and Gatewood. And Ann wasn't working, so I said, I'll take care of him. And so she has really helped me with my children a lot. And then I got Lessie when Kim was 4 months old. I got Lessie, and Lessie was with me for over 10 years. And when we moved out here, even though the kids didn't need any body here, because Tony was in junior high. Kim, of course, was in elementary school, second grade, I think. And, but because it was a new neighborhood, I didn't know the neighbors or anything like that, although I knew a lot of people that lived in Park Estates. They were our friends before we moved out here, and they'd all instructed their kids. Now, when you go to school and see Tony Raines, you be sure you be friendly with him and look out for him, see? And I wanted an adult here during the day, and then the pool, too, you know. And so Leslie came back, and I guess she was here for about 3 or 4 years. Maybe longer than that. I don't even remember now. Because poor Leslie died suddenly. And, but see, her children were growing up, and she really needed to be home with them, because she had 2 children in the courts. Because when I first had her, she was coming out of her first marriage. And she was young. She was about 22 or something like that. But she was wonderful with children. Just wonderful. And she was a great housekeeper. I mean, Leslie was the kind I didn't have to tell her anything. She really knew what to do. And she, oh, we loved Leslie. She was just like our family. Hopefully I'm going to have a few more opportunities to have fun. I'm kind of getting back after this upset of my husband being sick and complete cessation, and then a very slow down, a very slow amount of activity. I'm getting back, so I'm getting more involved, and I am, because I helped found the National Council of Negro Women. It was chartered right here in my living room. The council at Long Beach. And I'm going to start back working with them, because I'm a life member. And I'm going to get involved with, I used to be education director for the NAACP. And I'm going to get my dues straightened out for the sorority, because they're all my sorority members are on me. Because see, I've been out of the sorority for years. But I just had to give up a lot of those things because I did not have the time or the energy. And of course, I'm not in the links anymore. Of course, they all say once a link, always a link. But the kinds of things, some of the things that go on in the links, not the original bunch that we had in our chapter, but some of the others that have come in afterwards, it has become one of these competitive, social affairs, if you understand what I mean.
Yes, I do.
It's just like, to be a link.
There's not as much unity.
You're elite.
Yeah.
Well, see, I say bullshit. Because what are you doing with, because there's a very detailed, very heavy program. To be in the links is a lot of work. And it's not just tea and cookies. See? And, but my feelings are that a great many of the women that are in the links, they're in there for tea and cookies. They're not in there to really do projects, just like the Junior League. See, the Junior League does a lot of good things. And if you belong to Junior League, you really work hard. Of course, I was too old to belong to Junior League when I came here, because I think in the 30s, they cut it off. And, but we got a couple of black women here in Long Beach that belong to the Junior League, which I think is great, and because it's a great organization, and they really work hard, and they do a lot of good things. They're very supportive of a lot of things in the community.
Is there anything else that you may try to rekindle now that...
Well, I'm working with the mentor program at the church, because I'm really concerned, as many people are, with what's happening to our young people, especially our black boys. So we're working on, I went to a meeting the other night, working on developing that. And we've got some key people that are very interested, who are willing to work with us.
Oh, good.
And so, and we already started a tutoring program in our church on Saturdays. And the man that's running that, he's a teacher.
Good.
And young, but he's married, and they've got three little kids.
Well, I hope that, you know, all of these aspirations to get back and appease yourself in what I think is something that seems to have been born in you, and that is to give back to the community, whether it be through church or whether it be through social organizations or educational organizations. I hope that you're able to complete as many of the endeavors that you seem to be wanting to.
Well, I feel very strongly along all those lines, Benji, because I feel that a lot of things that have happened to me, they helped me to feel successful and to be successful, have been the result of some of the people's labors.
Oh, yeah.
And as a result, I feel very pressed to help somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
See? Because nobody gets anywhere by themselves. And I just feel if I can impact on any person's life to a degree that will cause them to take the right turn on the road, whether it's a high road or a middle road or a level or low road, as long as it's a good road, I will feel that I've done something. And I think that, and since I am almost completely a people person, because I really enjoy people, this is reason, I could sit up here till 12 o'clock last night. And as I was going to bed at 11, when I found out I was 11, I said, well, I guess I'll go to bed. And then I said, ooh, Arsenio Hall comes on. I've only seen him once before. But see, I can stay up all night long,
mm-hmm.
but I can't stay up all night long sitting around here. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to
motivate you.
Mm-mm. And I love giving parties, and I like having company and doing things for people and things like that. But I don't have the energy to do a lot of things that I've done in the past, so I'm not even going to get into that, except on a very small scale. And, because, you know, we've had as many as 300 people here, and it was great. But I also know that, just like yesterday, because I have really done a lot of running the last 2 days, and I was able to sit here and I did my nails. I played cards. Won twice, Benji.
There you go. Way to go.
And because that old dumb TV, everything is but war stuff.
Yeah.
And so that was just kind of background. He was listening. And so I just, it keeps me up. See, I have to have contact with other people.
Yeah.
And I have to have contact with people that are doing something.
Yeah.
Going somewhere, thinking about something, see? And I just never have lived in a vacuum. And I can't start now. And of course, everybody just, I saw several people yesterday I had not seen in several years over at the Board of Realtors. They were just having a fit, hugging me and going on and everything. I said, you don't change at all. You look just the same. I said, don't tell me that. I got a birthday this month. Which birthday? I said, I don't dare tell you because I don't want you dropping dead at my feet. And so, anyhow,
ain't gonna tell him.
Mm-hmm. So I feel, you know, I feel really up. And I went to this Black Burper's office to see his office for one thing, and then also to tell him about my house, because he told me when I put the house up for sale, because see, he bought a lot of my furniture out of my office,
mm-hmm.
and that he really wanted my franchise, but he couldn't.
I remember him.
Yeah, he couldn't. Dwight Hurt.
Right.
Yeah, he couldn't come up with the kind of money that I needed.
Right.
And so...
Did you get the message from him yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, see, I called him from the Board of Realtors because I was just a block away from his office.
All right.
And see if he had come back. And so I went up there. His wife was there. And we, you know, I guess I sat around an hour shooting the bull with him, talking about other offices and realtors and houses and things we know.
Everything.
And next Wednesday, he's going to come out. I told him, he said he really wants to see the house because he's thinking about it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I really want a black family in this house. I said, I'm telling. And So I don't know. But he has a couple of buyers that want big houses in Long Beach. And he had told me that a long time ago. And he's a really, really nice man. He's an engineering background. And so, you know, he's good with the numbers.
Yeah. That's what I want to thank you for, all of the invaluable information that you've given me, and I'd like you to make one last statement, whatever it means, but in closing, if there's anything else that you can briefly say, amen, whatever, I'd like you to do it now.
I think, Benji, that this has been a very wonderful opportunity for me to talk about things that I haven't thought about in years. And I feel that it's very significant for you and your brother. I certainly would like to have my children have the benefit of a copy of this, because they need to know something about their parents. The other thing, both my children know they're adopted. And Tony Kim, when she was 17, 16, something like that, she just raised old Ned with me.
Had some problems with it.
Yeah, she wanted, first of all, she told me she wasn't black. She wasn't black. So I said, well, I don't see why you had so much trouble being black. And I named off four friends that she knew very well, who you would never think they were black, because they're blonde, and that real blonde, and real light skin, but they are black, and they don't pretend to be anything but black.
Yeah.
And she knows them well. I said, now, they don't seem to have any trouble being black. I don't know why you have so much trouble being black. Then she wanted to know who her real mother was. So I said, well, fine, that's no problem. And I sent her down to the social worker, and that she was still there on the job, and the woman called me up, asked me, did I know she was there, and I said, yes. Do you have any objections to anything? I said, none at all. I think she has a right to this, and I want you to give her everything you can. Now, she can go further, because they've opened up a lot of stuff about adoption that didn't exist years ago, which I think is right, because I think no kid should be denied their background.
Okay, what happened?
And, well, she was satisfied. She knew her mother had blue eyes and, I think, brown hair. That's where Stephen gets his blue eyes from. And she knew everything, a little more than some of the things that I had told her, because I didn't know her mother had blue eyes. But I know, like I always told her, your mother loved you dearly. She did not want to give you up, but she made me a happy mother. Because when I got you, because Kim, I think, was 2 months old, she had cut a piece of her hair off in the back to keep that as a memento.
Right.
And I said, your mother loved you very much. Because I think if circumstances had been today, she'd have never given you up.
Sure.
And, but she made me a happy mother. And when Kim was going through all this frickets with me about this, see, I asked Tony. I told Tony about it about a year later. I don't remember now when I told him. I think he was in Seattle when I told him. I don't remember. But anyhow, I told Tony about it, and I said, now, Tony, if you want to find out about your birth parents, you have my... Yeah, I really want you to do it if you have. He said, I don't have any problem with that, Mom. I don't have. But I sent him a lot of papers that I found. See, him and I have been going through drawers and files and things. And his birth certificate was there, and the social worker's name from Nashville, because we got him in Nashville. And all that sort of thing. I sent everything I had. So he has that in his possession. And so... only thing in closing that I can say, and this is something that I have been doing for a long time, maybe a year, maybe 2 years. I don't remember when I started doing this, but it's been a long time. I pray every day. And my main prayer is, thank you for the blessings of yesterday. Thank you for my health and strength. Forgive me my sins and help me to be a better person today.
You said, and then you go on from there?
Then I go on from there and I have a prayer list and I call their names and ask that God give them courage to hang in there, strength to go on, and above all, peace.
Thanks, Francis.
And I do that. Well, I couldn't have survived these last 4 years. 5 years. I'm going to tell you. And I just said, well...
I've been watching you. And I'm impressed.
Are you really?
Well, I don't think that a lesser person could be victorious after the dust has cleared as you have. I have a lot of respect for you, particularly over what you've been confronted with in the last 4 or 5 years. Just wanted you to know that.
Well, thanks, Benji. Thanks a lot.